Now, even that extent of scepticism isn't the whole way. We haven't said anything yet about time. We just talked about things existing or not existing independently of me or otherwise. But there's this question. Suppose I can know that I exist. Do I know that I exist in the past? Do I know I'll exist into the future? Well, here's the problem. There's a problem here about how do I know about the past and how do I know about the future? And there are two questions about this. One is about the future, one's about the past. The one about the future goes as follows. I've made, over the course of my life, various observations about the way things behave. I know that if I jump from a tall building, I'll fall under the force of gravity. I know if I eat bread, I'll be nourished. I know that if I touch fire, it will burn me. I know a great many, take myself to know a great many things about the way the world behaves. But the skeptic, and on the basis of that knowledge, I take myself to know how the world will behave in the future. I will take it if I eat bread now, tomorrow, that it will nourish me just as it always has. Well, the problem that comes up against this common sense belief, and it's usually attributed to the 18th century philosopher David Hume, is called the problem of induction. And here the problem is, how do I make an inference from what I've observed in the past to what I believe about the future? After all, what's the case in the past doesn't necessarily imply that something will be the same in the future. Maybe things will change in the future. Maybe the sun won't rise tomorrow. How can I be sure, given what I know about the past, that the future will be the same as the past? How do I believe in the uniformity of nature, the idea that things will always carry on obeying the same laws? Well, again, you can see there's a gap here, an epistemological gap. My reasons for belief in that the bread will nourish me in the future consist of my observations about the past. But my observations about the past don't extend to my observations of the future. I don't make any observations of the future. I just make a leap from the past to the future, and the question is, what justifies making that leap? That's the problem of induction. Now, there's another problem about the past. This is usually attributed to Bertrand Russell, who's a 20th century philosopher. Do I know that the past exists? I have various beliefs about the history of the world and my own history. How can I be really certain that they're true? So, for instance, how can I be certain that the Earth didn't come into existence 5 minutes ago and written into everything about it were traces of a past which didn't really exist? The Earth hasn't existed for, as we're told by cosmologists, millions and millions of years, and the universe for millions and billions more. It only existed for 5 minutes, but it was created in such a way as to give rise to the illusion that it's existed for much longer. Rather like the brain in the vat case, there's an illusion there that there's a reality. How do we know that's not the case? Again, the problem is we're inferring that the past exists and has a certain extent from certain traces of the past in the present. But how do we justify the leap from the existence of the traces to the existence of those past events? So this leads to an even more extreme sceptical position, sometimes called solipsism of the moment. Solipsism of the moment is the only thing I can know to exist is me right now, not me in the past, not me in the future, not anything apart from me, but only my own present state of consciousness. Well, that's the scepticisms which are liable to come up and the familiar kinds that philosophers talk about. We might now ask the question, is there any limit to this scepticism? Well, implicit in what I've said is that it is apparently a limit, and I would myself think there is a limit to the scepticism. Because solipsism of the moment, though it rejects almost everything we take ourselves to know, there is one thing it doesn't reject, my own existence now. It says that can't be doubted. Now here's where we go back to Descartes. Many of you may have heard Descartes' famous Latin tag, cogito ergo sum. Well, here's what that means. Descartes, having pursued the method of doubt in showing that everything could be doubted, asked himself the question, is there any limit to this? Is there any point at which doubt ceases, and which is something which cannot be doubted, which is indubitable? Well, here's what he said about that. If I'm doubting, there's one thing I know, that I'm doubting. That I can't dispute. If I'm doubting, I know I'm doubting. Doubting is a type of thinking. So, if I'm doubting something, I'm thinking. So I know that I'm thinking. I may not know that I've thought anything in the past. Maybe there is no past. Maybe I don't know anything will exist in the future. And I don't know that the things I think about really exist, but that I am thinking. That's something I really do know, and I can't doubt that. Well, that was one thing that Descartes thought couldn't be doubted. He thought something followed from that, which is quite interesting. Not only do I know that I'm thinking, but I know that I exist. That's a step from knowing that I'm thinking or that there's thinking going on, because just from the fact that there are thoughts, does it follow from that that there's anyone that has the thoughts? Well, Descartes thought that it did. And his reason is fairly commonsensical and intuitive. It is, surely if there are thoughts, somebody has to be having the thoughts. There can't be unowned thoughts which belong to nobody. So given that I am aware of thinking, it can only be a thinking possessed by an agent, a person, a self, and that surely that self must be me. So I know that I exist. Not necessarily in the past, I don't know, I continue through time, but I know I exist now. So I think, therefore, I am cogito ergo sum.